Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Friday, February the 3rd. Hello and welcome to Africa Link, live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Mwanji Komora from the social media desk.
And in today's program, fears of fraud in Kenya's ongoing voter registration exercise.
So we've been so focused on fixing the problems of politicians who all want to get to power, so they're trying to game the system, but not fixing the system itself.
What do Kenyans think about these allegations? We find out on the social radio segment.
And the EU agrees on a 10-point plan to curb migration through the Mediterranean Sea.
Part of the plan will also be to beef up the Libyan Coast Guard. So part of the plan is to train them, give them money that they can buy more ships. But it's really hard to know whom to train, whom to give the money to, whom to speak to.
Plus, Zimbabwean activist Pastor Evan Mawarire is denied bail after appearing in court. Stay tuned for all these stories right after the news.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. A French soldier has shot and wounded a man wielding a machete who tried to assault him beneath the Louvre Museum in Paris. The assailant shouted, "God is great," in Arabic before he attempted to attack the soldier at the museum's basement level. The soldier fired 5 shots. The suspect is currently in a serious condition and receiving medical attention. Hundreds of tourists had remained inside the museum during the incident, and some were taken into special safe rooms. The public prosecutor said an anti-terrorism inquiry had been opened. European Union leaders meeting for a summit in Malta have agreed on a 10-point programme to curb the flow of migrants entering Europe via the Mediterranean. The plan includes stepping up assistance for Libyan authorities, especially the Libyan Coast Guard, and providing support for the setting up of safe refugee camps in Libya. The EU will also support voluntary repatriation for refugees willing to return to their countries of origin. The European Union summit is being overshadowed by Britain's planned departure from the bloc and by the uncertainties surrounding the intentions of US President Donald Trump, the Chancellor of Austria, Christian Kern.
Today we have pretty mixed feelings, honestly speaking, because the last steps we've seen, the tangible aspects of Mr. Trump's politics are raising some concerns.
The European Union's foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, also voiced criticism of the new US president.
Our way is cooperation and partnership. We do not believe in walls and on bans.
When asked if Trump will be a topic at the meeting, German Chancellor Angela Merkel appealed for European unity, saying Europe had its fate in its own hands. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos announced on Friday that he will not be seeking another term in office at elections in August. The 74-year-old, who has been in power for 37 years, has named his defence minister as the candidate to succeed him. He is João Lourenço, a former general who emerged as a probable next president at a meeting of the ruling MPLA late last year. The Zimbabwean pastor who launched the popular This Flag protest movement will remain in jail after a judge in Harare decided on Friday there was enough evidence to suspect he committed a crime. Evan Mawarire faces a 20-year sentence if convicted of subverting a constitutionally elected government. He stands trial on February the 17th. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanji Komwaura.
Shattered credibility. The ongoing mass voter registration exercise in Kenya has been rocked by controversy following allegations of fraud. The Daily Nation published an article saying the IDs of former President Daniel Arap Moi and Mwai Kibaki have been used to register multiple voters. Kenya's opposition leader has cried foul over the registrations, accusing the Jubilee government of tampering with the process. But the ruling coalition has dismissed the claims. Patrick Gadara is a Kenyan political analyst, and I asked him how damaging these allegations are to the credibility of the electoral process.
The fact is, for a very long time, we've had a problem with our electoral system. FK Macharia, one of the owners of our largest registration, went to the Senate a month ago and essentially told them that of the five elections we've had in Kenya, only one, I mean in the multi-party era, only one has delivered a vote, the presidency, to the person with the most votes. So if you think about that, this is a huge, huge problem, but we have not, as a society, sat down and tackled it. So we've been so focused on fixing the problems of politicians who all want to get to power, so they're trying to game the system, but not fixing the system itself, so it actually produces a proper and credible outcome. And this is what we end up with, is a situation that we'll essentially be rerunning the 2013 and 2007 election, because we haven't sat down to fix the problems that had been identified with those elections.
And what then will be the best way to identify and rectify the problems facing the Electoral Commission?
To actually have a proper, independent, comprehensive and public audit of the entire system. We know now that the election is scheduled for August, which doesn't give us much time right now to do anything that would be as comprehensive as we would want. But I think there's still scope for changes based on reports that have already been done. Looked into the whole issue of the electoral system.
All right, let's now go back to these allegations of voter registration fraud. At the moment, it appears that much of that is happening in the Jubilee strongholds. But does that mean it's all clean in the opposition strongholds?
We don't know what the extent of it is, how many people are actually out there holding double registrations, how many ID cards are there being used by multiple people. And if you think about it, we've got thousands, even millions of ID cards that are lying around that have not yet to be collected. Now, that does create an opportunity for fraud if somebody wants to take that ID, give it to somebody else or pretend he's somebody else and go and register to vote. There are many ways that you can use that to game the system. And as we are seeing now with the revelations by the nation and the opposition, that there are gaps in the system that actually allow this to happen. And it is very scary. It is to actually safeguard the credibility of the results. And it is that credibility that ensures that the election itself is a peaceful exercise. If you're to safeguard that, then you've really got to investigate this, ascertain where the failures are, the extent of the failures, and actually make sure something is done to fix them before August this year.
Kenyan political analyst, commentator, and satirist Patrick Gadara in Nairobi. And we do apologize for the technical quality of that telephone line.
Now, Crispin, looking at the social media, we have several Kenyans who have been responding to this story. Chiponda Mwagongo says, "I am really worried about these findings as my vote won't count because I'm sure these aren't just allegations." We also have another comment coming in from Alema Geroi Saruni, who says, "These allegations create mistrust and tension between the public and the electoral body. Can we be able to run credible voter registration?" he asks. D. Owocha also comments and says, "I'm regretting my past efforts voting for change that never was. Someone must be penalized for playing Kenyans."
Thank you, Wanchiku. We'll keep following on that story. Now, what does a border wall in the United States and money to Libya from the European Union have in common? Well, both measures hope to stop the flow of migrants. And this Friday, EU leaders meeting in Malta agreed on a 10-point plan to curb migration from the Mediterranean. The summit was, however, overshadowed by US President Donald Trump. DW's Max Hoffman is covering the summit and explains what the new plan to stop African migration to the EU is all about.
Well, as usual, the EU has a lot of points there, but if you break it down, it's really about two things. First of all, trying to keep migrants from entering international waters, because that's where they usually get rescued by the EU mission Sophia and then taken to the European Union. By the way, that's also the business plan of the human traffickers. So if you keep them from going into international waters, they won't make it to the European Union. And then the second part of that plan is those that stay in Libya or have to wait in Libya or get sent back or return to Libya on a voluntary basis, that they be treated in a more humane way. And to make sure that this actually happens, they're throwing money at the problem, as the EU often does. In this case, they're going to help the United Nations and the International Organization for Migration and also the Libyan government to improve the living conditions of the migrants in Libya. And then also they want to help the Libyan government secure the southern Libyan border to make sure that less migrants even make it into Libya. So that's the plan at the moment.
But again, striking a deal with Libya, as Chancellor Merkel is calling for, is a very pretty challenging issue, because there's really no, let's say, de facto government in Libya.
Exactly. It's, if you compare it, for example, to the Turkey deal that they struck last year, already then many people doubted that it would work. It worked in the end. If you go by the numbers, there's a lot less migrants coming over the Western Balkans route. But here, Libya is an extremely difficult situation, a many-layered problem. And just to give you an example here, for example, part of the plan will also be to beef up the Libyan Coast Guard. Actually, that's an important part of the plan, because if you keep migrants that make it on the boats in Libyan waters, so they can't make it to international waters, that's where the Libyan Coast Guard has to do this. But the Libyan Coast Guard, I think, has two or three ships at the moment. So part of the plan is to train them, give them money that they can buy more ships. But it's really hard to know whom to train, whom to give the money to, whom to speak to. So European Union is trying to do that now, but it won't have immediate effects, most likely at least, as the Turkey deal had last year.
DW correspondent Max Hoffman at the EU summit in Malta. And from the EU, let's return to Africa. Zimbabwean activist and founder of the hashtag This Flag, Evan Mawarire, was this Friday denied bail. He's accused of subversion, plots to remove a constitutionally elected government, abuse of the national flag, and inciting public violence. Mawarire was arrested on Wednesday at Harare Airport upon his arrival from the US. Columbus Mavunga has been following the proceedings.
Basically, the judge was saying Mawarire cannot be released on bail because he's likely to abscond, and also he has links, given that he has been out of country since last year when he had another charge of subverting a constitutionally elected government.
And what is next for Mawarire and his lawyer now that they've been denied bail?
Mawarire will be back in court on the 17th of February for further remand. Maybe that's when he'll be finished with a trial date. But his court, his lawyer, Harrison Nkomo of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, says the judge today erred. So he's taking the case to the High Court on Monday.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. And of course, we'll keep you posted on that story developing in Zimbabwe.
Now back to your discussions on social media. Douglas Mwanzora says, who is a former member of parliament in Nyanga North, Zimbabwe, was also present. And he tweeted saying, "We are waiting for Mawarire to be brought to court. Really, justice is in the intensive care unit in Zimbabwe." We also have another comment from Keith Tapiwa Makuni, who says, "Times have changed and so have the minds of the oppressed." Another comment from Moyo Manala, who says, "I had one petition to God. Zimbabweans have suffered a lot under President Mugabe, and he really needs to step down." Jay Badza adds and says, "The Zimbabwean government is not very good for refusing the pastor freedom. Where is the soul of ZANU-PF?"
Well, today, also, Wanjiko, another story you're following is that of President José Eduardo Santos of Angola, who confirmed that he will not seek re-election after being in power for 37 years. Angola's Defense Minister João Lourenço has been named as the presidential candidate of the country's ruling party. Dos Santos is the second longest serving leader on the African continent. Only Teodoro Obiang Nguema, president of Equatorial Guinea, has been in power longer than the Angolan head of state.
And of course, the question of leadership in African countries is always one that evokes different emotions. And we'll have some of your comments a little later in the show.
You're listening to Africa Link. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, battling cancer in Kenya.
At the moment, cancer is a burden to this country that should be given the attention it deserves, because we are losing 28,000 people a year.
And we hear the challenges and successes of a Ugandan blogger, Fred Kamwada.
And after last night's game, what are people saying? We'll find out more much later.
Don't miss out on all these stories. Now, tomorrow, Saturday, February the 4th, is World Cancer Day. Health experts have been sounding the alarm over the growing cases of cancer in sub-Saharan Africa. And add to that, around 80% of Africa's 1.2 billion people have no access to radiotherapy and related cancer services at all. In Kenya, cancer is the third leading cause of death after cardiovascular and infectious diseases. At least 28,000 Kenyans die of cancer-related complications each year, according to Kenya Cancer Association. Ruben Kiama reports from Nairobi.
Andrew, one of the caregivers at a cancer center in Nairobi, shows me around the children's cancer ward, where several young cancer sufferers are admitted. Kenyan officials and health campaigners say that the increase of the number of people, among them children, suffering from cancer-related ailment has put a heavy strain on the nation's healthcare system. Deborah Modi is the executive director of Kenya Cancer Association, a Nairobi-based non-profit organization that seeks to raise public awareness about the disease.
At the moment, cancer is a burden to this country that should be given the attention it deserves, because we are losing 28,000 people a year, and those are on record. What about the people who die at home and nobody knows it's cancer?
Official figures show that cancer is the third leading killer disease in Kenya after cardiovascular and infectious diseases. According to Dr. Catherine Nyongesa, a lead oncologist at Texas Cancer Center, a private facility providing treatment and care for cancer patients, the statistics are depressingly alarming.
Cancer cases are increasing. With the current trend, it's actually estimated that it may cause more deaths than HIV, AIDS. It's quite common. In a population of over 40 million, we diagnose more than 40,000 new cancer cases. And we suspect this is underreporting because we do not have a national cancer registry to pick every cancer case happening, you know, in the villages. And many of these cancer patients probably are viewed like maybe they've been bewitched, so they never come to be confirmed cancer cases.
The cancer specialist, who also works at Kenyatta National Hospital, the country's main referral hospital, laments that due to lack of awareness, most of the reported cases of cancer are diagnosed at late stages, resulting in death.
When we look at our country, if we diagnose 40,000 new cancer cases per year, we see we lose about 28,000. So majority of these patients are dying of cancer because it's being picked up late.
Cases of childhood cancer are on the rise, unlike in the past, when cancer was considered as a disease of the old. Some say the changing trends could be attributed to changing lifestyles, among other factors.
Robin Kiama in Nairobi.
Blog Report.
This week's Blog Report takes us to Uganda, where we meet Fred Kamwada. He's a passionate journalist, consultant, and a political analyst. He's a fierce critic of President Yoweri Museveni and once landed in trouble for writing about an intelligence chief in Uganda. Our correspondent Alex Jita caught up with him to find out why he started blogging.
I had passion for writing, authoring, commercially. I call myself a commercial writer because I write for money. So I started authoring. It's very good because you motivate yourself, you find an issue. And I have been having a following. in the country. Because of my writings, I had a political column in Red Paper, but the state got problems with it when I started having personal views, and it was terminated. I was then forced to write about these soft issues like sports and so on. But the political one, that's how I drifted into the blog, because there nobody can censure me. It's personal. Although you can take me to court, but still, it's a personal initiative, and it's very good.
Let's talk about that. The intervention by the state in your writings, is it a risky business, blogging in Uganda?
Yes. During elections, it's very risky. But the beauty of it in Uganda nowadays is that there's some kind of freedom for the media. Although, when we are in the newsroom, you are told not to write about the first family.
Why is that?
Because the president said so. If you can abuse him, but don't attack his family. So that's where the difference is. We have some kind of freedom in our writings, but you don't go over the line. You don't get personal. Like me, I've never abused the president before, but I am his biggest critic of recent. Because I see the positive that he has done, I criticize him on a policy, and I don't attack his family.
What has been your experience maybe with the police? Mm. Have you been, for example, invited to the police to explain what you've posted on your blog?
The only time I was summoned to CMI was when I wrote about the army.
CMI being the Chief Interest of Military Intelligence.
And I think that was a personal thing, because the chief then of that organization, I wrote him and him his method of work. And for him, he thought that somebody was using me to undermine him, and he summoned me, and we had a small talk. It was not so bad. He thought his deputy maybe could have been the one undermining him. He wanted to know that. That's when I was summoned to the CMI then. But as a state, I have not been subjected to that.
You mentioned you being paid by Google because of the adverts they post on your blog.
Yes.
What other fulfillment do you get out of blogging?
In most cases, people who write, they write for passion. They don't write for money. Although it is even better if you write for passion and for commercial purposes as well. So I derive a lot of satisfaction in seeing my article getting reviews all over the country. For instance, I posted something about Congo. I was saying Congo needed to be split again to have it peaceful and so on, sustainable. We need some states within Congo to secede from the big Congo. That writing attracted a lot of attention, and I saw it on the websites of most of the media houses in Rwanda. And that was my source of satisfaction, because I post political issues that will stand the test of time. Because in 2005, I was writing about the partitioning of Sudan, and I was told that Muzai Garang was against the partitioning of Sudan. He was for the bigger Sudan. So we championed the cause through our writings. And when it happened, some of us were very happy.
Ugandan journalist and blogger Fred Kamada. Now, politics aside, let's talk football. Cameroon and Egypt will now meet at the AFCON final in Gabon. Cameroon beat Ghana 2-0, while Egypt edged Burkina Faso 4-3 in a penalty shootout during the semi-finals. Zipporah Nyambura joined Cameroonian fans here in Bonn as they witnessed the indomitable Lions defeat Ghana Black Stars. Take a listen.
The voices of jubilant Cameroonians who had gathered at a local pub here in Bonn to watch the match between their team, the Indomitable Lions, and Ghana's Black Stars.
Cameroon are the best land for Africa.
Cameroon.
From the start of the game, Cameroon seemed to be the better side after dominating the match for most of the time in terms of ball possession. A couple of counter-attacks by the Indomitable Lions failed to get into the net thanks to the heroic saves of Ghana's goalkeeper, Brahima Razak. It was not until the 72nd minute that Cameroon was able to break into the Black Stars' defense and score its first goal through Michael Gado. And before the final whistle, Cameroon sealed Ghana's fate with a second goal from Christian Basago, who made a lone dash for close to 40 yards before he comfortably tipped the ball over Razak. And these were some of the reactions from the fans.
No, very happy. I feel very, very happy. I don't know, maybe I wouldn't sleep this night just because of happiness.
Why did you see us like that, standing here drinking Guinness, shouting this loud?
Black beer, black mimbo.
What are the best? We respect this, but we got this.
Africa, of the best.
Yes.
The
best of Africa.
And we are proud of this.
Yes,
small picking. You drink one again. are the best. We didn't expect this. That was a big surprise.
For the Ghanaians, the defeat was indeed a bitter pill to swallow, having gone into the tournament as the favorites.
Now I'm here. I don't know what has happened in Ghana. I believe Ghanaians are going to sigh tonight. Yes. Those who love Ghanaians to win the citizen, I believe they are going to sigh like how we are sighing in our heart here.
For most Africans abroad, distance does not dampen their spirit, especially when their team is on the field. Flavia Nyakana, a Ugandan living in Bonn, says the tournament also gives them a chance to come together and share in what one said, the African spirit.
I'd rather come and watch here because it feels more at home. You know, you have that African thing, African effect. And you get to meet people, different people from different countries. And
for now, all the focus is on the final match on Sunday when Cameroon will play against the Egyptian Pharaohs, a repeat of the 2008 final in which Egypt beat the Indomitable Lions.
We beat Egypt. No, white people, you know, they come to Africa and they say that Africa. We beat them. You know.
Zipporah Nyambura reporting. And just to inform you that we do have our reporter Adrian Krish in Libreville. We'll also be covering the final, so do follow us on DW Africa Facebook page for an update of the game and as well on DW TV.
Now, Crispin, last night was the other important match in the AFCON. And this match is the one that determined which team will meet the Pharaohs on Sunday. Now, listen to this, Crispin. The team that didn't look like it was set to win after having rows over bonuses went on to score 2-0. Cameroon surprised fans indeed.
Very, very much. And it was interesting because it was being dubbed as the worst Cameroonian team ever, you know, in its history.
Exactly.
And it's very interesting that they have done very well so far.
And I think it's something that where you cannot be quite sure which team between Egypt and Cameroon will win the finals this time round. It's not as black and white as it might have been if the Cameroonian team would have been stronger. Like you were saying, everyone thought this was the worst team they could ever front for such a big cup. And as of course, not everyone was supporting Cameroon. Some people like Cypras Kamuya, a Ghanaian fan, said last night the best team lost. Of course, he's talking about Ghana there. We have Dr. Dipo Awojide who says, brings in the jollof rice competition saying Ghana couldn't win the jollof rice competition against Nigeria, couldn't win a football game against Cameroon. I sympathize with Ghana. And Crispin, we went live on our Facebook page from Libreville, capital of Gabon, where dozens of Cameroonian fans took to the streets in celebration. And we had our own correspondent, Andre Fotso from Cameroon, who was closely watching who would win.
Really, I am not surprised. Since the beginning, I saw a Cameroon very enthusiastic, a very dynamic team, very good team, finally, because we are looking to win the World Cup, the African Cup of Nations. I'm not only a journalist, I am the journalist who's seen for Cameroonians, for the Lions, and I say, levons-nous pour les Lions indomptables! Allez! 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 Allez les Lions! Allez! 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 Cameroun au bosso!
That was Henry Fotso, and you can hear the excitement and joy in his voice there.
He's
Crispin.
Definitely not hiding his excitement for his Cameroonian national team.
Not at all. And so we know who he will be supporting in the finals on Sunday.
Right, Wanjiku. And remember, Cameroon and Egypt will meet in the AFCON final for the third time, with Egypt winning on their previous final meetings, that is 1986 and 2008.
And we have a comment here from Michael Oti Adjei, who says, what Cameroon has done with all the players who said they didn't want to play is remarkable. The spirit has been outstanding.
Right. And then we have another one, I guess, from Vicky Ogana.
Yes, coming in right now. And he says, I am so eager to watch the Cameroonians lifting the 2017 AFCON on Sunday's final?
Well, that is a Cameroonian fan, no doubt.
Definitely. Who are you supporting for the finals?
Again, I'm supporting the best team, the team that wins. I will be supporting that one.
I see you, Latte.
Anyway, we have to leave it at that, Wanjiku. Thanks to everyone who contributed to this talk on social radio. That does it for this edition of Africa Link. You've been great company throughout the week. From me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiku Mwaura.
Goodbye and a pleasant weekend.